Chief, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. I'm Bill, and that's Wendy. Thank you for listening. We hope that you'll enjoy what you hear. Hi, Wendy.
Good morning, William. I like starting out with Stevie Ray Vaughan, I got to be honest with you.
Yeah, gets the juices flowing.
It does.
It does. It definitely does. We certainly can't spend 2 hours talking about President Trump referring to a former coworker and friend as a dog. But
you've called me worse.
No, I never have. Have I?
No, I don't think so.
Please tell me if I have.
No, you haven't.
I don't think I
have.
I've thought it.
Yeah, but
I've never said it out loud. Never tweeted it.
Because
I don't know
dog.
How Twitter works. Again, I've thought it so many times. All right. So here's a quick question. What?
Right? I'm with you on that question.
Right? So this was a friend of his. This was somebody that he appointed, and rightfully so. She more than proved herself on The Apprentice. So if you do a good job on The Apprentice, that does nothing but show that you can handle the U.S. government. We've learned that time and time again. So is it disturbing? And if it isn't disturbing, why isn't it disturbing? It should be.
I don't get this whole story. So she was fired. Now she has a book out. Now she's saying, you know, boy, I compromised.
She's got dirt on Trump. But at this point, and Steve, you can jump in because you and I have already discussed. You don't want to?
I heard Steve was so disgusted with this chat yesterday on the John Williams show. I believe you called her a bag of wind at one point.
I'm sorry about that. But she...
I just don't get the whole thing here.
Because the whole thing is ungettable. It's unfathomable. You know, she was a contestant on
The Apprentice.
On The Apprentice. And then she
got a name for herself.
But she got an unfavorable name for herself, right? I mean, I didn't watch the show, but she wasn't respected.
No, the opposite. But Steve, you have to know that when they were formulating that show, they were behind the scenes, they were going, we need heroes and we need villains.
Sure, sure.
And she was
stepped up to the plate.
The villain.
But then after the show, I mean, I don't know what she did after that.
I don't either.
And then
she
becomes
the girlfriend of the guy from the Green Mile. That's what she did.
She became the highest ranking African American person on the White House staff.
Right. Right.
Which is just an upside down thing. And now she's gone and she apparently knew she was going to be fired, or she knew no one liked her. So she was running around recording everyone with her iPhone, which was completely inappropriate.
Yeah.
And now she's releasing these tapes and they're incredibly dishy. So we're all listening to them, but. And then the president, you know, the president of the United States, no matter who he or she is, referring to someone as a dog and a lowlife because he or she was personally insulted. The whole thing is just disgusting.
It's a laugh. It's a joke.
It's funny.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
It really truly is.
But hasn't it reached the point where, and I've used this analogy before, that America just says, throw it on the pile. Like in the old days, we would be aghast at this. We would go, oh, no, the president is saying something like this?
Right.
But now you just go,
nothing surprises.
There it is again.
Well, and that's why whether you want this president, you know, removed from office or charged or exonerated or whatever you want, I just don't think anything that Robert Mueller releases in a report is going to matter too much because we've seen so much now. You know, I mean, everything's out there and And you've made up your mind one way or another. I can't imagine Mueller coming up with information that is surprising to any of us.
A week ago, and I told you this, Wendy, I think I said this on the air. I'm almost positive I said this on the air. Donald Trump said, I can destroy the careers of Republicans that don't agree with me. If Republicans and I don't see eye to eye on something, I can destroy their careers. So I read this and I went, oh, wow, wow. And then everybody I brought this up to last week said, where'd you see this? And I go, well, it was on the internet. And then there was a story about it in the newspaper. And they go, wow, that didn't even make a dent. Like nobody's even that wasn't even disturbing to people that the president said, if there's a leading Republican out there who doesn't agree with me, I can destroy his or her career. That didn't even make a notch. Nobody even blinked at that. And then I think I said last week, if Barack Obama had said that, because I know everybody loves to compare our former president and our current president, if he had said that, that would have been the front page news everywhere. Everybody would have been like, wow, Barack Obama said that he would destroy the career of somebody that didn't agree with him. But Trump says it, and we all just go, yeah.
That's a mild thing that he has said, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And, you know, Steve, you mentioned that Omarosa became the highest ranking African American in popularity or just in...
No, in the White House.
At the White House.
Now, and so it was kind of funny. Kellyanne Conway was asked yesterday, or maybe Sunday. Sunday, you know, now that Omarosa is gone, who is the highest ranking African American on the staff? And she said, well, you're ignoring the fact that... Ben Carson is the Secretary of Health and Human Services, I think. And they said, well, yeah, but that's not a White House staffer. Who has access and talks to the president every day and who is on his staff? And all she could come up with was some guy's first name. You know, she goes, well, Jeffrey.
Jeffrey.
It wasn't Jeffrey, but I'll find the name. But she just said, well, you know, Jeffrey's around all the time. And sort of that's it.
Well, the most popular doesn't always mean the most popular.
No, not popular. This is highest ranking. Yeah, so this is, you know, most authority.
Wow.
So if you were a career politician, let's say you were a career politician who happened to be African-American, wouldn't you say to yourself, wow, I've been doing this for years and years and years, and here's a woman who just by virtue of being on The Apprentice outjumped me somehow?
How did we get the president? Listen to yourself.
He was on The Apprentice.
Well, it should be. I mean,
I know you're speechless. I know this is really unbelievable.
I just
want to begin
what I say, but it should be. It seems concerning to me. The young man's name is Jerron. She said, "Well, Jerron is here."
Yeah.
And what does he do? What's his position?
Let me find it. I don't remember exactly.
That's the first I've heard of him.
Well, yeah, I've never heard of him either. But,
and, well, because Omarosa was taking all the
credit. Well, and Kellyanne didn't even know his last name. No, the point is, Wendy, there aren't any. That's the point. There aren't any.
There's a bunch of calls lining up. You know,
don't make me start sighing.
No,
again.
I don't want you to sigh. That's not my goal.
I choose to forget what's going on.
But you know, at this point, her goal is to sell books right
yes.
now.
Well, she's
so,
doing a good job.
All that's happened in the last 48 hours is she's going to sell more books.
Well,
so,
and she released another tape today.
This is about the staff's fear that an N-word tape could come out.
And these are personal conversations that people had. They did not know they were being recorded.
Thought was illegal.
It depends on where you are.
Oh, that's true. In Illinois, it is.
Now, there's some. The Washington Examiner is reporting today that apparently it looks like the Trump campaign is going to arbitration to try to stop her from doing this, saying that she had signed the non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah.
So that's their story alone right now. We'll see where that goes. Maybe they can stop it.
What does she have to lose? I mean, she'll get a lawsuit.
Nothing
but
at this point.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, right. I could sue her for a lot of money, I'm assuming. You know?
Defamation
can't squeeze
of character?
Blood out of a turnip, if
well,
that's even
it's not
correct.
Defamation. It would be violating the terms
the disclosure.
Of the disclosure.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. All right, your thoughts on this, please. 312-981-7200. Love to hear from you. Wendy's sighing. She's in full sigh mode.
Hope it goes better than last night's game. Wow.
Yeah. They should bring you in to do that play ball thing. That's very inspiring.
Play ball.
That's extremely inspiring. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy.
I have no inspiration anymore.
Your inspiration is gone?
Totally sucked out of me.
Oh, don't say that. Please don't say that. Don't say that. The president, your Donald Trump, has
He's
referred
not my
to
Donald Trump.
Omarosa Manigault as a dog and a lowlife. In the old days, the presidents rarely said things like that about former co-workers, former friends, but he has referred to her as both a dog and a lowlife. Your thoughts?
And wacky.
Yeah,
wacky's thrown in there, too.
Yeah, you can throw some wacky in there.
My God, why doesn't he teach a Twitter symposium so I can learn how to use my account more frequently?
He does every day.
I mean, oh my God.
You just have to log in.
Yeah,
I'm logged in.
All right, so they have said in the past, why don't they just take Twitter away from him? Part one, who would do that? Who has the ability to do that? Who can just go in and say, Mr. President, it's really in your best interest and the best interest of everybody on planet Earth for you to not be Twittering?
It's a freedom of speech.
All right, yeah, I guess it is, right? But second of all, like people always say it like he wouldn't even notice. But you would notice if you're the president, you're tweeting stuff and you what you're waiting for is that backlash, that reaction. It would take him 30 seconds to notice they've turned his Twitter account.
Well, don't they have that thing? We should ask Bridget Carey later on today about that. She mentioned it. They ghost your account where you're still tweeting, but no one can see it.
You think you're
yeah,
tweeting.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
You're not actually tweeting.
That would crack me up.
But if he watches Fox and Friends every day, so he would know that he'd go, hey,
there aren't
no
any friends of mine.
They're not talking about me. What happened? My tweets must not be going out properly.
All right. Well, Mike has some comments on Omarosa. Mike, how's it going?
I'm okay. This Omarosa, I really think, is a backstabbing lowlife. Anybody who secretly tape records President of the United States and her co-workers, on a government facility, and then eventually decides to write a book about it and use those tapes, which are obtained illegally, the public should just boycott her book completely. Punish her financially.
I'm not going to read it. Are you going to read it, Bill?
I'm not going to read the book. I've been, I'm interested in what is being said in the book, but I won't purchase the book, no.
But consider your sources. You know what I mean? I don't trust her. I don't know. Mike, I don't like the illegally recording things either. Although, as so we pointed out, it's not necessarily
illegal there.
Must
right.
not be.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. But we shouldn't take her seriously, huh, Mike?
No, as a matter of fact, something just occurred to me. Years ago, there was a girl that was on the Brady Bunch who wrote a book who put in a fairy tale about sexual tension between her and one of her castmates as if some late lesbian thing was about to happen, which sold tons of books. Later on, she admitted she made it up.
Hmm.
She dragged somebody's name through the mud to sell books.
Marsha.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mike.
Don't believe what you read. Don't buy the damn books. That's what I say.
Thank
don't
you for your call.
These people. Thank you.
There's a couple of texts that say that in the White House, they tend to take your phones away. I don't know that that's true of everybody who goes to the White House, but we've got at least one or two texts saying that if you're a citizen in the White House, they confiscate your phone. But I don't know that they do that with
evidently
staffers.
Not.
I can't imagine a situation where they do that with staffers.
Well, there were some incidents where they were in some meetings, Sean Spicer and others, and Sarah Sanders were asking people in the communications office to leave their cell phones out because they were having so many leaks.
There were leak problems.
But not the highest ranking.
I don't know about in the Situation Room if people are allowed or supposed to, or they just by habit don't. I don't know the answer to that.
Joe, talk to us.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I think you're avoiding the main point, but what I think is going to come out sooner or later.
What's that?
I have a feeling they had an affair.
Based
you
on
know what?
What?
Nothing
come?
Would shock me. I don't have any opinion.
But why do you think they would have an affair?
Well, I think they probably did back when she was on his show. And now it's probably going to come out sooner or later. That's going to be one of her recording releases,
but
I'll bet.
Okay. If that were true, though, that would be the number one thing she'd be talking about right now to sell that book.
Yes and no. I mean, she could be trying to keep it under wraps until Mr. Donald Trump starts to pour out all his vulgarities on her, and he's doing that now. So I seriously think, even I don't like her. I can listen to her, and I think she's lying about a lot of stuff. But I know he's a liar, so it's just a matter of time before I think it comes out. Honestly, I believe they had an affair when she was on Trump's show.
That would be interesting. I'll stand by and watch, Joe.
Yeah, me too.
Have a good one.
I think there was probably the level of flirting that he kind of walks through life with, where he says, well, there's a woman in the room. She's obviously attracted to me. How could she not be attracted to me? I'm Donald Trump. But if she's doing everything in her power to sell a book right now,
what he just suggested,
yeah.
If it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or if it's sex, it's Beck's best.
I don't think that's a phrase.
All right, real quickly, Esther has been on hold for a while. Esther, go ahead.
You know what? I'm going to tell you, Wendy, I really like you, and I call in. I love this show.
Thank you, Esther.
But,
feelings are mutual. There's a big butt coming, and it's not just mine. I know.
I'm an older Afro-American woman, and I have a daughter about your age. But I want to say that if President Obama had acted like this president, he would have been in office about 15 minutes, and then he would have been gone. And I don't know why Trump isn't gone already. I'm sorry. I dislike the man immensely. And I don't like to not like people. But he's awful.
Esther, the standard has changed dramatically in the years that have gone between President Obama and President Trump. The standards are just completely different.
As far as I'm concerned, this president has no standards. He's not presidential, and the things that he says, they're just obnoxious. And no president of any country should act the way he acts and talk the way he talks.
Amen to that, Esther. I like you right back.
Thank you.
We were talking about George W.
Yes.
I was not a fan of his.
Yes.
But I didn't go to bed fearful every night that he'd wreck our country. He
right.
did some suspect things, but
right.
I wasn't afraid and I wasn't embarrassed.
Right. And
well,
he didn't text.
Maybe a little, but.
He had an Etch-a-Sketch. It was better that way.
Hey, right. This man is an embarrassment to our whole society.
Thank you for your
Esther,
call,
thanks.
Esther. Take care
you
of yourself.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I love when she calls us. It is true, though.
You, yeah.
Any, and not just Obama, any other president.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just wouldn't be accepted. It wouldn't
right.
be tolerated.
Everything's changed. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got news, and then there's a lot more show. Stay here, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
There's an HR violation going on.
There will be as soon as the song is played.
Well, also, you're dancing. That's
I like big foot. I cannot lie. You other brothers can't deny.
Wait, do that dance thing again.
Can you see this, Steve?
Unfortunately, from behind.
How about that?
Yeah. You like big butts, too?
You know,
Bill doesn't have one. Men don't have big butts.
Well, some.
Not many.
Some do, but not many. Boy,
God,
this
I love this
me.
Song.
Yeah. This reminds me of when Roy Leonard used to host the afternoon
yep.
show here at WGN. Many times he'd
Saturday
start a
mornings.
Segment.
Yeah. Saturday mornings at 7, he would do this. He'd have
the
a banana stand up.
Yeah. Here's a headline that I read on a Huffington Post, and I said Wendy should probably weigh in on this. Brazilian butt lifts are resulting in an alarmingly high mortality rate.
And waistline.
And waistline, too.
What are butt lifts?
Brazilian butt lifts. It says Brazilian butt lifts have become increasingly popular in the past few years. The Brazilian butt lift is definitely on the rise. It's not surprising.
What is it?
It's not related to the Brazilian
wax. Is it twerking?
Wax, is
no,
it?
Mary, no, it is not. No, it's not.
Well, they're both Brazilian.
Yeah,
they're
why?
Probably distant cousins.
Right.
Well, you want a smooth butt, don't you?
And I cannot lie.
Oh, man.
What?
It says it's not surprising considering pop culture's growing obsession with large, perky derrieres from Jennifer Lopez.
I can't listen to you say large, perky derrieres.
Well, you better not call my sex hotline then, Wendy, because you're going to get a lot of that for $3.95 a minute.
With an accent.
Is
yeah,
that the
with
voice
a Dutch,
you use?
Yeah.
Dutch accent.
Yeah.
Does your voice crack in the middle of talking to people?
Yeah.
That's your specialty.
That's my specialty.
Just talking
people
bucks.
Love it.
You got to
have. There should be. My voice should crack. From Jennifer Lopez to Nicki Minaj to Kim Kardashian.
I guess
it's like the
crack.
This is the Hall of Fame of big butts, Wendy. We like big
Keep
butts.
Up, Wendy.
Yeah, come on. But according to a recent report from the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, the BBL, that's Brazilian butt lift, to those of you just joining the show and confused, is one of the most dangerous cosmetic procedures available.
So you just lift your butt?
Well, surgically.
Not your daughter's butt?
No, they surgically give it a lift.
Like a
you know.
Facelift, but a butt lift.
Why
yeah.
would it be dangerous? What
Whoa,
are they doing that's
Steve,
dangerous?
Steve.
Yeah, there's a lot of padding in there.
What? Steve, it's so dangerous. I know you've, in the past, I've had to talk you out of getting one because
right.
I've said to you, you're my friend and I don't want you to be harmed.
I said that if I got it free, I'd do it live on the air.
Right. Right, for sweeps week. As with any surgical procedure, there are risks. But BBL patients, or bubblers as I call them, Wendy.
And who doesn't?
It's more fun to call them bubblers.
Or bublés.
Is this real life?
Yes, this is real life, Jasmine, please. But BBL patients have an alarming mortality rate. As many as 1 in 3,000 people who undergo the procedure pass away
wow.
from the procedure, compared with 0.002% from all office-based cosmetic procedures. This according to a 2016 study by the Aesthetic Surgery Journal.
So which gap fit would you use if you have a BBL?
Oh, that's a good question,
would
Steve.
Would it be the loose fit? Probably not. You'd want
tighter.
Curvy.
Better.
Classic
curvy,
fit would probably work.
Classic.
Go curvy.
Yeah.
Didn't Geraldo have fat from his butt put in his cheeks or something?
He had.
Those were words.
His face?
Yeah, I think he did.
Oh.
He did.
So this would be the opposite. What do? They just, is it like butt implants?
It is. Yeah, essentially it is. It's a lift and an implant.
It's weird. It would
kind of like
so
a
dangerous.
Breast implant?
Yes.
The same thing you'd use for that?
Bill says it so calmly. Yes.
You,
I believe.
Why are we asking Bill anyway?
Well, because.
He got the story.
Yeah.
What does he do at night on the internet?
That's my business. According to Dr. Douglas Senderoff, a
yes.
board-certified...
Send her off, get it? Because she dies.
Oh, Wendy.
What? Oh, this is a fake story.
No, it's on the internet.
This is not real. I can't believe 3,000 people actually get this procedure.
Oh, yeah. It's very possible.
You're better than Dr. Sanjay Gupta.
Do they do it? Do they do it, Bill, in just one, or do you have to go back for the other?
No, you do. You get them both done at the same time.
So it's not like the cataract surgery.
Otherwise, you'd walk in a circle.
You would keep.
So how do you sit down? Can you not sit down for a little?
Oh no, you can't.
You can't sit down.
How would you sit? You know,
because it's tender.
Yeah.
So I would sell Neely chairs right outside the doctor's office.
And riding a bike would be an issue.
Oh, it would be.
Wow.
It would definitely would be. And birthday party spank contests would be stopped. You couldn't have them anymore.
You embarrass me and the show.
Do you remember? Well, that's my goal every day. Do you remember when you were in school, if it was a kid's birthday, they did what they called a spank party? Did you guys have this?
No, it was a spanking machine.
A spanking machine.
A spank party? Yeah. That was different. That's when you got into high school.
That was at that Hilton up in
right. Yeah. They had a big there was a problem there. But like now, a school couldn't have something like that. Spanking machine.
Of course not.
You couldn't have that.
School's not fun anymore.
No. Nope. Thanks, Kevin Spacey, for ruining everything.
I think we need to take a break.
We'll take a break. All right, we'll take a break, and then Bridget Carey will join us.
Is she a bubbler?
She won't.
Oh, Wendy. Don't. All right, a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
You know what that music means? Bill's favorite time of the week, actually.
It's one of my favorites because I learn from this, Wendy. There's things I just don't understand, and I learn from this.
It's a Tech Tuesday, and Bridget Carey, CNET senior editor, is here to put it all into perspective and help us figure out what's going on in the world. We mentioned this earlier today, Bridget, and we're all reading all over the internet that even though you don't enable your location, Google Maps, which I use all the time, is still following me and knows my whereabouts, and should I be worried?
All right. Well, it is upsetting that when you think you have a setting turned off, there are other secret settings that you don't know about that are still turned on, and things aren't just clear. This is something called location history, because right now, like by default, the name to your Android or iPhone, it's gonna track where you've been throughout the day, and of course, Google says it does that to really cater the experience. Like what you would like, and honestly, I just turn that stuff off. What you might not realize is that there's a separate additional way that they're still tracking you even if it's off. If you're paying to check the weather, if you're doing a Google search for anything, it's trying to see where you are during that search. If you just any little thing that might be a Google tool, it's just going, ping, where are you? Let me see. And then that is in the background still being used. So, you don't have to, if this bothers you, it's annoying, but you can still turn this off by taking another step. You have to go to something, and I have to look up the exact phrase. I think it's called web and apps. Yeah, web and apps. And then in that category, web and app activity, you have to then turn off that level of tracking, and they go, well, you won't get all the ads. Well, I don't care. That's okay.
You won't get the ads. Who wants the ads anyway?
I mean, it sounds for some people I talk to who don't care. They go, well, I do want ads to be customized to me because then I have a better experience. And usually younger interns I talk to who say this, who really don't like think of anything wrong about tracking or they just don't have enough life experience to ever care. Like, sure, tracking, who cares, you know? But there are some privacy weird moments. And I think it's because time and time again, these companies play fast and loose with our data. And something can come about that you don't realize that, you know, maybe someone's not thinking in the best way of, you know, of how to use that data because they're going to target and profile you, you know, and what that means and what you see on the internet based on where you live. And I don't really know how that information would be sold to just anybody. I don't know what third parties also have this information because that's how Google makes their money, right? You know, they take, oh, you live in this place, you're like eating at that restaurant, and who are you sending that to? You know, so if you're like me and you want to be really, really protective about this stuff, you can turn it all off. Or if it doesn't really bother you, then go ahead and just leave it on. But at least you know. At least you know that even if you've turned location history off in your maps, other Google apps
can still track your can still track your location at certain times of the day.
Bridget, considering what just happened with Facebook and their selling of information, should we be concerned that Google's doing something with this information, the constant tracking of its users? Is there something similar coming down the line with them, do you think?
That's the kind of stuff I had in my mind when I say turn things off. It's not that something is going to come out, but it's more like sometimes I think it's a matter of when. You know, when you have these companies who make money by sharing your information with third-party advertisers, we don't know exactly how those folks are going to use it ethically or not. There was just a recent report in ProPublica that said insurance companies are using this ad data in some cases to see, ooh, Bill, did you go to the store and buy gummy bears? You are not healthy. Oh, you don't have a membership to a gym either? Maybe I'll charge you differently for your insurance. You know, that's the kind of world we're kind of heading into that I don't like.
Bridget, here's something scarier with insurance. They could say you got from point A to point B faster than the speed limit would allow, so we're going to charge you more for insurance because you're obviously driving very, very fast.
Now you're thinking like a paranoid tech reporter. Yes. Exactly.
Yay.
See, I don't care if anybody knows where I am, but then you think about it, if I ever commit a crime.
If.
I've never committed a crime. But that's something, too. Like, police can't just search your phone, can they?
I think they can.
I think they need a search warrant.
Yeah.
They can go to Google what they need and gather all the information that all the, that they've collected. So, yes, this is in the same realm of, like, okay, so, you know, could someone have a warrant? Could someone track me? Could someone, you know, just think I'm, you know, profile me and everyone who's, like, done a certain thing? And you don't, it's a weird feeling, you know, that you're just trying to look at the weather and suddenly there's information about you in some server that can be subpoenaed. You know, it's a little weird.
See, now I have a use for it because you can go into the Google and find out, you know, where someone was because we got a red light ticket.
Yeah.
And it's definitely our car and our license plate. And I don't think I was there. And Jim denied it. And even my kids are like, does it look like Dad? I go, you can't see who's in there.
Yeah.
Finally, Jim fessed up. Oh, yeah, I guess it was me. But that's something you could go back and check locations on a phone number, right?
It could be to your benefit in those cases too. Exactly. But then again, that's a lot of effort that someone would have to go through, and you know, for you know, certain issues. I don't know about traffic tickets.
It's $100 ticket.
But yeah, there you go. It is possible. Yes.
So the bottom line is, this could be good, but it could be bad. It's somewhere on
the internet.
It's like the internet. It's good and bad at the same time. Yeah.
All right, we always talk about iPhones, and iPhones are pretty expensive, but now Samsung has a new event. Tell us about that.
Well, they just had one, last week, and they just announced a whole bunch of products. They got their new Note 8 phone. It's on sale now, but it lands on the 24th, and this is their extra large screen that has a stylus pen. It really didn't have any whiz-bang different look about it, but it had a whiz-bang price of $1,000. So welcome to the world where top-of-the-line phones now cost $1,000, just like the iPhone X.
Wasn't that a benefit of Samsung, though, Bridget, that it wasn't as expensive, so a lot of people were using it instead of the iPhone, and once they use it, they love it?
I mean, Samsung has so many phones that, yes, there still are less expensive phones, and people love it, and it's just they're trying to kind of show that this is for the power user. You know, we have a stylus built in that snaps right in and out, and you can do more work by writing on the screen, and so they're kind of just heading in that territory now that the iPhone stepped in first. I think that consumers may be a little more hesitant now to, like, upgrade right away. They might wait to the next one. I think next year, we're in a funny stage right now. When it comes to especially with Samsung phones, there's been a lot of talk, and they themselves have said they're working on some great new technology for phones, having a fingerprint scanner in the screen itself, not on some sort of little special button area. Being able to fold a phone, we talked about that, and Samsung says they're working on it. These things could come out next year, so why would you want to just dump $1,000 unless you needed a phone when you're like, oh, maybe we need it in a year. So it is a funny space right now. Samsung also showed off, they have a new watch called the Galaxy Watch, and they also showed off a speaker, just like how there's, you know, the Apple speaker that talks with Siri, and Amazon has its Echoes with Alexa. Alexa, Samsung's like, oh, hey, hey, us too. We want to be in the mix with something called Bixby. And so if you really are into Samsung products, yeah, they have their own assistant called Bixby. And the speaker itself, to me and to a lot of folks, wasn't exactly something that was really cool looking. In fact, it looked kind of like a witch's cauldron, I would say.
Just in time for Halloween.
It had three pegs to it. It looked kind of like a grill in some cases, you know, and it's just big. But, hey, okay, Samsung's getting in the game, too.
All right, well, Bill's going to get it just because of Bixby, and I wonder if one of the higher echelons...
Big Bill Bixby fan, huge. Yeah,
I wonder.
Yep.
All right, well, cool. Thank you for the update on what's going on this Tech Tuesday. And if people want to find you, where's the best way to find you?
Oh, always on CNET.com, doing something.
Perfect.
Thanks,
thank
Bridget.
You.
Have a good week.
All right, thanks, you too.
That's Bridget Carey from CNET.
Who might need a better phone?
How ironic.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, sometimes, and I notice we're in the high rise now, so... sometimes you have to go by a window. Have you ever been on the phone with somebody and they say, well, I can't hear you. You got to go stand
by
a window.
And it works? I didn't know that.
So maybe next week we got to tell her to stand by a window.
All right.
That might help.
Yeah, that'll work. All right. We'll do a quick break and then some news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Bill, it's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. Bertrand, thank you so much.
Thanks,
for the
Steve.
News.
Hey, no problem.
It was great.
Really, I get paid for it.
Bill, you told me, I think a lot of people had been talking about the CNN series, but you told me about it a while ago, this comedy series. Like it's
History
an eight,
of Comedy.
Eight-parter or something like that.
I don't know how many parts
there
it has.
There are a lot.
But it started last year, and it's really good. Really good.
I have been sitting on it.
How does that feel?
Thank you, Potsy. Because sometimes I don't have time to watch things, and I forgot that we recorded it, so it was on the DVR.
Yeah.
So Jim and I have been watching it, and it is absolutely phenomenal.
They take different aspects of comedy. Like one episode, it'll be about trailblazing women in comedy. Another one, it'll be what did drugs do to the world of comedy? It's all
stuff,
unfortunately.
Yeah. They have great teams.
Yeah.
The ones I've seen were the improv.
Mm-hmm.
That was really good.
That was really good.
I have no training in that. You're awesome have studied it. It's really fascinating to me.
Yeah, they do a great job. There's one that's all about politics and how it's related to comedy. There's one about current events and how that relates. It's been a great series.
I haven't seen them all. I haven't seen the women one. But I saw last night, I watched the Legends Who Have Gone Too Soon or something like that.
Yeah.
All the comedians that were lost too soon.
Yeah.
And just seeing some of the clips, I got to tell you how much I absolutely adored Toadie Fields.
Mm-hmm. So she would have been in her late 40s maybe when she died. Does that sound right?
It seemed like she shouldn't have been in that group. And unless I fell asleep towards the end, did they forget Andy Kaufman?
I didn't see that episode, so I don't know. But I'm sure Andy Kaufman has been featured kind of throughout, so I'd be shocked if they didn't include him. If the topic was comedians who died too soon, Andy Kaufman certainly deserved a place in there.
They mentioned Bill Hicks, who
was funny.
So funny.
Yeah.
When was he popular? Do we know?
He would have been probably late 80s into the 90s would have been his. Oh, maybe later than that, maybe. Yeah, 90s into the zeros.
Bill Hicks, if you haven't seen him, do some YouTubing, because, oh my God, he was so funny. He died of pancreatic cancer in 1994. He was only 32 years old. His legacy lives on. Oh, even though he died young, so many people credit him as an inspiration to their comedic genius.
Yeah, he wasn't a household name.
No.
But I saw him a couple times here in Chicago. I got to meet him a few times. One night, there used to be a comedy club called The Funny Firm downtown.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that one? So he was working there, and there was a table right up front. And all through his set, very early on, it started at about the 2 or 3 minute mark, one guy would get up and just not come back to the table. Then another guy would get up and not come back to the table. It was a big table of about 10 or 12 guys. And by the end, there were only 2 or 3 guys left. So obviously their plan was, one by one, we're going to walk out on this guy. So he noticed this, and he just said, hey, I'm curious, where are you guys going? Like that. And the other guys were all standing by the door, and they said, we have to go. And he goes, you have to go? Why? What happened? And he goes, we need to go. And he goes, well, you can tell me why. I'm a grown up. If you're not being entertained, certainly let me know. And they go, yeah, you're just not very good at what you do. And the crowd just went, oh, like that. And he goes, no, you know what? There's something to that. He goes, like any of you have a job, there's days you come in and you do the job right. There's days you come in and it's not going well. Obviously, you caught me on a bad night. I appreciate you being honest with me. If I'm not doing a good job, thanks for telling me. I really appreciate it. So it looked like that was the end of it. He goes, just out of curiosity, though, I'm just wondering, what is it you guys do? I'm just curious. And they go, well, we work for Exxon. Well, this was about 5 months after the Exxon Valdez mishap, shall we say. So he goes, okay, I just want to make sure that I get this right. I'm not good at what I do, which means I'm in a comedy club. People don't laugh as hard. You guys just screwed up the ocean for the next forever. So let's see who's really not good at what they do.
He turned it all around.
Yeah. From then on, it was just it was insane in that room, you know, because he couldn't have been more honest and right, you know.
And that he was a very honest comic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Toni Fields, by the way, was 48 years old when she died in 1978. But they show she was a very bad diabetic and lost one of her legs because of diabetes. And there's this one clip they show where she's on stage in a wheelchair and a couple of guys are trying to get her up. And they're like, can we give you a hand? And she goes, no, you schmucks. I need a foot, not a hand. I mean, it was just really super funny to me. And they talked about how so much honesty came out in stand-up, you know?
That's the thing with a lot of the better comics. It's one good thing if you have the ability to do a setup punchline type act, but it's the ones who are just really honest and play the moment, as she did, as Bill Hicks did, the guy I just said, that really sets you apart.
Tig Notaro was featured on this, too.
She did not die, just for the record.
No, but here's a quote when they were talking about some of the worst of times is what you bring up on stage. And she said she spent, you know, her whole life making fun of how flat-chested she was. So she thought her girls got mad at her and said, let's kill her. So she got breast cancer.
Yeah.
And in her HBO special, she took her shirt off and showed her double mastectomy scars to people.
Wow.
That's real.
Yeah.
They mentioned Robert Schimmel, who he had cancer as well, too, didn't he? Yeah. He beat cancer, survived a heart attack.
But died in a car crash.
His
daughter was driving a car that he died in.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Horrible. I got to know him really well. He was one of those guys that on stage, Robert Schimmel, you couldn't be more dark than Robert Schimmel. I mean, he just was darkness personified, but then off the air, still dark, but there was a lighter side to him. He really was enjoying life, and sadly, his daughter was driving a car. He was in the passenger seat, and that was the end of him.
That's after beating cancer and something else, and a heart attack, he survived. Yeah. And then, God, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Some other people, of course, Lenny Bruce, was 40 years old when he passed away. I just am familiar with things I've heard and seen. I obviously was not around to see him perform.
One of the most trailblazing comics of all time, just because he was told point blank, here are things you cannot say and do on stage. And he just went, oh, really? And then he just did them.
And that paved the way for almost every other comic when you
think
about
it. It really did. And sadly, a lot of the recordings you hear of Lenny Bruce, it was the later years when, I hate to say this, he wasn't anywhere near as funny as the early version of him, because the early version of him was him just doing material. Then in the later years, it got to be about his struggles of not being able to do what he wanted to do.
And that's
not it was a little more self-serving than it needed to be. He was still funny, but nowhere near as funny as he had been.
Two other guys that were mentioned in the CNN comedy special, this was ones we've lost too soon, a guy named Mitch Hedberg, who I have to be 100% honest with you, I never heard of until
then. He's so good. Very Stephen Wright-like in nature. Just strange observations that you just say to yourself, no, I can't think of anyone in the world that would have thought of this but that guy. He just had a lot of that going.
He died of a drug overdose in 2005. He was 37.
Yeah.
And the clips I saw, and I'm going to look for material from him because he really struck me as super funny.
Yeah, he's really good.
And Greg Giraldo, I knew nothing about.
Very funny also. The way to see his work mostly is on the Comedy Central roasts. He was on almost all the Comedy Central roasts while he was still alive. Just one of those take no prisoners type of comedians where you just go, no, when this guy's on stage, no one's safe. He'll take anything down. He'll take anybody down. And did it well. Well-written jokes, great delivery.
He died very suddenly funny. Of an accidental overdose of prescription medication in September 2010.
Yeah.
He was a Harvard-educated comic?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's rare, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
All right, there are some other people, and there was a list put together on a website called thoughtco.com, and comedians who died before their time, but I think they left off a lot of people.
Did they leave some big names off?
Can we take a break and come back and
definitely
explore this some more? And we're going to give away some tickets. Patty Vasquez and Emo Phillips are together in a Laughingstock Comedy Festival in Woodstock. We're going to give you a chance to win tickets for that as well. We were talking about the CNN comedy special that's been out for over a year, right, Bill?
It's a series, yeah. It's really good.
Oh, is it going to keep going?
Yeah, I think so.
I love it.
They did a couple last year. They're doing more this year, so I hope it keeps going. I like it.
The particular episode I saw last night, and yes, I said episode because I'm from the East.
That's how you do it, yeah.
They were talking about comedians that we have lost too young. Of course, Andy Kaufman was mentioned.
No doubt about it.
God, I loved him.
Was Freddie Prinze mentioned?
Yes. He was 19 years old when he appeared on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. Sammy Davis Jr. was on that show. They kind of bumped some time with Sammy because they asked Freddie to come to the couch.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I didn't realize he was 19 years old, and then he shot himself at the age of 22. And they were saying you literally take a kid who's not ready for life and you throw him into this adult world of comedy. It was just too much to fathom for him.
So sad.
He was super funny. Yeah. They did mention him. Patrice O'Neill was someone I had never heard of, I hate to say.
Oh, he's so good. Patrice O'Neill, again, a guy that isn't a household name. But masterful with the crowd so many nights, even though he had great material, he would just go out there and look around the room and that became the show. And he was just great at it.
He died in 2011 of complications from diabetes. And I don't know, after seeing him, I kind of recognized him.
He did some of the Comedy Central roasts, not a lot of them, but he would show up on those from time to time. And actually, the other roasters would rip him because they knew about his battle with diabetes. And then when you saw that later, knowing it took his life, you just go, guys, back off a little bit. At the time, they didn't know, of course, it was gonna take him, but... Yeah, he was a very, very funny man.
Bernie Mac, another guy from here. I loved him.
Yeah.
He really was funny. Age 50, he died complications from pneumonia. Chris Farley.
Way too soon.
Oh, my God. Just the clips they showed. God, he cracked me up so much.
The people who worked with him on Saturday Night Live. Now, keep in mind, Saturday Night Live has become... the all-star game of comedy. The best comedians go to Saturday Night Live. It's just how it's worked. All the guys that worked with him said, hands down, he was the funniest guy there. You couldn't out-funny Chris Farley. I mean, we had limited contact with him. We had him on the show once. I used to audition with him. With Nicolette Sheridan.
That's when that ninja movie came out, and he was such a blast.
Right.
John Belushi, of course, was mentioned on this. He was great.
Yeah.
Sam Kinison.
Yeah.
I forgot.
So he would have been in his late 30s or early 40s probably when he died.
Well, it's weird because it wasn't the drugs or alcohol that killed him. He was killed in a car accident in 92, just 6 days getting married. It doesn't have his age here.
I think he was going Los Angeles to Las Vegas, or it might have been the other way around. But there was always a story. All right, so in his caravan, I think there were three cars in the caravan going either from Los Angeles to Las Vegas or the other way around. There's always been this story about what happened at the end after the car crash. And he was friends with a comedian named Carl LeBeau, and I had him on when I was doing the night show here. And I said, Carl, there's a story about Sam and his last moments on Earth. You were there. Tell me if this is true. And I said, actually, better yet, you tell the story. So Sam gets involved in a car crash and then gets out of the car and walks around a little bit. And Carl was there. He saw this and he was all panicked because he knew the car crash might possibly take his life. He got out of the car and he was staggering around. And then he kind of just kind of looked off to the side and he goes, okay. And just faded away. And Carl said to those of us, and Carl LeBeau wasn't a very religious guy, he goes, it was like seeing him notice something or see something that was otherworldly
and walking and to accept it. Oh my God.
Yeah. Very strange.
Phil Hartman was mentioned, who was
genius.
He really was.
Absolute genius.
And his wife,
Bryn.
Murder suicide.
Yeah. Yeah.
I believe in front of the kids.
The kids were in the house, yeah. But they were not in the room.
That's really sad. Horrible. But the CNN comedy special, is it called something that I'm missing?
I think it's called The History of Comedy, I think.
All the different, I got to see the women of comedy. Cause,
it's very Elaine Boozler heavy. That particular episode has it, and that's not a bad thing. Elaine Boozler's great.
No, but there are so many more women in comedy, and it's so funny because this list they put together, like comedians who have died too soon. Why isn't Gilda Radner on there?
Oh, she's not. That's crazy. Yeah, she deserves a big place in that special. But yeah, the one about women, I've not seen an episode that hasn't been entertaining and informative.
It's
so
super good.
It's really good.
And we have something to give away, and I was just actually looking for an excuse to play this song because it's awesome.
I don't know why I feel this way. I don't know if it's right.
Do you remember this song?
No.
Oingo Boingo, it only makes me laugh.
I don't remember this.
Well, if you'd like to laugh, we have a pair of tickets to Laughing Stock Comedy Festival. It's in Woodstock, Illinois, August 17th and 18th. It features Emo Phillips, our own Patty Vasquez will be there, and WGN-TV's Anna Balaval.
Oh, what a show.
How do you say her name?
La, 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 la.
She will be there. Get tickets at laughstockfestival.com. And we have a pair of tickets for this Friday night, because it's Friday and Saturday. And if you'd like to go, what number caller?
9.
Don't say no to me. Caller number 9-312-981-7200. We'll set you up with a pair of tickets to see Emo Phillips, Patty Vasquez, and WGN-TV's Anna Balaval. Caller 9-312-981-7200. Thank you, Ryan. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Bill, just yesterday, we were talking about a Colorado school that was toying with the idea of turning the school week into 4 days instead of 5. And you and I were talking about how it's just not really fun to go back to school.
Yeah.
And a week from yesterday, I know my kids go back to school, and a lot of kids in the area are heading back to school. There's going to be a big transition, and we get one of our experts on, Lisa Heffernan, New York Times bestselling author and co-founder of a website I frequent pretty much 4 times a week, grownandflown.com. Lisa, how's it going?
Great, Wendy. Thank you for frequenting us 4 times a week. That's lovely to hear.
Lisa, do you recommend we send our kids to school?
No. Everybody no. should just keep them home.
Yep, I'm with you.
I think it's pretty inevitable. And, you know, in the country, there's such a range of dates when kids go back to school, so there's a big wave. It sounds like Chicago's kind of right in the middle of it. Some schools have already gone back, and some kids don't go back till after Labor Day.
And that's the way it used to be. We were talking about that yesterday. It just seemed to be Bill would watch the Jerry Lewis telethon, and then you knew to go get school supplies.
That was it.
And then you got out in June, and we wondered why that changed. We looked it up, and we found out a lot of times they want you to get your finals finished before the Christmas break, and also it gives teachers time to prepare their lessons so the kids do better in these scholastic tests, because that's how the school gets money.
Got it, because those are scheduled nationally. That makes sense. You know, one of the problems for kids, though, is that, you know, it feels like summer, and they may not have gotten all that summer reading done or whatever assignments they were given. Middle school and high school kids often have summer reading, and it's kind of easy to let that slip. We've got a group, and I see parents every night posting, he's only got 700 pages to read before the morning. Mm. So if there's one thing parents with a week left to school probably need to focus on, it's how much of that school reading is left to do, and can they get it done by the time it needs to be done.
What are your thoughts, Lisa, on that summer reading? My kids have blown off a lot of that, and then they're scrambling to get through it. Bill, you and I I didn't want to read a book during summer.
No.
I don't know that's necessary.
Huh.
No, and kids often don't want to. It's, you know, the summer reading assignments are important to get done because they were assigned. And if a student hasn't done them, a lot of high school teachers who write for us say, own up to it. If you haven't done it, just admit you haven't done it. Don't try and fake it and lie. The last thing you need to do is start off the year with a bad relationship with your teacher. But in terms of more general reading, it's actually super important. Hate to say this, but kids go into that summer slump where they just, they're not reading, they're not writing, they're not using their math brains, and then school is just a bolt from the blue. So if there's a little bit of time left, and if they could just pick up a book and just, it's like exercise. You almost just need to get back into it a little bit.
You know, Lisa, during the summer months, I'm a big reader. I'm always reading something, but I didn't want the school to dictate what I was reading. Is there any way to find a compromise in that?
They give you pretty big choices on the lists.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your own reading is just as important. If that's what you were doing as a kid, and if that's what your kids are doing, that is every bit as important. They just need to be reading, just not to let that skill, and even for middle schoolers and high schoolers, it's still a skill, not to let that drop too much over the long summer holiday. So it doesn't really matter what they read. I mean, if there's an assignment that needs to get done, but it's just keeping it going over the summer.
All right.
Now, I know it's stressful for the kids to get back to school, but it's kind of stressful for the parents, too, when the kids get back to school, because all of a sudden, the lazy days of summer, you have to get them there on time, you have to wake teenagers up, which is very difficult. It's an adjustment for both of us, isn't it?
It really is. There's a couple of things. You know, I used to treat it like jet lag. So you get over jet lag an hour a day. I'm not sure I could get my kids to get up an hour earlier every day. But instead of that, just one morning where they're up at 6:15 after having slept till 11, that's just really ugly picture in a lot of families. So if there's a week left, I used to try and adjust my kids a half hour a day and say, look, every day we're just getting up half, and, you know, the eyes would roll back in their heads. You know, I get a lot of negativity, but it does make that first day of school a little better. There's a lot of transitions I need to make also. You know, a lot of kids haven't done a lot of physical fitness over the summer. And they're going back to high school or middle school. They're either going to try out for a team or they're going to have a PE class.
You're going to have to run the mile a couple of times in your PE class.
Exactly. So, you know, even if there's just a week left or in some places if there's more, just trying to get back a little bit physically fit. It's the same as the reading. It's you know, for your body instead of your mind. Just getting prepared by just doing a little bit more exercise than you might have done if you've been playing a little too many video games or inside a little too much as kids are these days.
So that's changed over the generations, because for me, when I was a kid, that's when I got the most physical activity.
You're on your bike, you're out all day.
Constantly. Yeah.
But there weren't video games when you were growing up like there are today.
I guess.
There was no internet. Yeah, no, we were outside constantly. In fact, we probably started school in our best physical fitness, because once we got into school, we were going to sit in the classroom all day. Kids don't necessarily do that now. And if they're going to be doing something where they're trying out for something, or even if they're going into a regular physical education class, you know, 4 or 5 days a week, it's not a bad idea to get a little prepared for that. The other thing that's really stressful for families, I know it is in my house, is cooking dinner. Everybody's busy going a million different directions. And we always think of family meals as families sitting around the table. So somebody, some adult, some mom or dad prepares a meal and then kids just show up and eat it. Family meals probably should be with some involvement from teenagers in the kitchen. And if you try out a few of those meals before school starts, kind of doing a dry run, what are 3 meals our family can make super quick that we all love, that are super healthy? Practice some of those while there's more time and just get the timing of them right. And then you've got those sort of 2 or 3 meals that, you know, you can just pull out whenever your family needs them. So cooking in this family can be fun, but it also can be preparing for the school year.
That was something I was really adamant about. I wanted to make sure that we had family dinners together as often as possible, every Sunday for sure. And boy, that fell by the wayside when you have a kid who has a job or there's after-school activities. It's really tough to make that happen.
Really, really super tough to make it happen. If a kid's on a sports team or in a school play, I mean, those things go very late. But, you know, some of that meal prep can be done also together on a Sunday night. So even if it's great to sit down as a family on Sunday, but you can also, you know, put aside an hour and do some family cooking to prepare for the week, whether it's for lunches or for dinners. And summer is a great time to do some dry runs of those meals so that they go more quickly once the school year begins.
Lisa Heffernan, she used to work, you were a trader, weren't you?
And just I was.
Decided, you know, it wasn't even your kids were home and needed you. Weren't they going to college? When did you make the switch to grownandflown.com?
No, I became a writer when my kids were home and needed me. Yeah, trading is kind of a tough job with kids. The hours are pretty brutal. So, yeah, that's when I left.
And thank God she put together grownandflown.com. We're going to take a quick break. If you have any comments or questions, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. Hey, y'all. It's back to school time, and we are chatting with Lisa Heffernan. I really do enjoy going to grownandflown.com. A lot of times, Lisa, you do a great job with the website, but I got to tell you, there are some guest articles on here sometimes that really touch me, and I don't know which one to go with, but I'll say this one. Some things I want my son to know before he leaves for college. I texted this to my sons, and I said, they first of all responded, "Oh, God, this is long, Mom. What do you?" I said, just in your own time, just kind of read some of these. And some of these are good. It's advice for your kids, mainly sons going away to school. Some great comments on here. Don't skip the opening band. Once Bono was part of the opening band and then there was U2, need I say more? Just little tips and trades. Be honest and true to who you are. Respect yourself and others. And one of them that I love, anytime, day or night, you can text, call, or Skype your parents and little brothers. We really miss you. Your mom is stocking up on waterproof mascara, and we can't wait to hear about all your firsts in college, first class, first football game, first time you vote. So these are great little tips on sending a son away to school. Would daughters also benefit from these?
Yes, they will. The waterproof mascara is genderless, as is voting. Yeah, we've got some great daughter stuff on the site also. You know, we try and bring a lot of different parent perspectives. Everybody has a different experience with sending their kid off to college. Some parents are just overjoyed and bursting with pride and just don't shed a tear. And other parents,
and then there's Bill.
Truly, yours truly pulled over on the side of the road because she was unable to drive, sobbing so hard. And one of the things we try and tell parents is there isn't a right way or a wrong way. All of these are the right way. Whatever experience you have, that's the right experience.
It's so emotional. I mean, you saw what I went through, Wendy.
I know.
With both of my daughters. And you say to yourself, I know this is coming. It's not going to destroy me. And then it comes and it does. It destroys you.
Not only is it coming, but it's what you want to come. You know,
sure.
Rob Lowe wrote a great piece about, you know, you're not sending your kid to jail. You're not sending your kid to war. This is what we have always hoped for them. College was where we hoped, you know, their lives would lead at some point.
Yeah. So why does it affect us that if we know it's coming and it's a good thing, why so emotional?
Two things. One is we know that our family is changing forever. And, you know, any of those inflection points in our lives are emotional when we know there is no going back, that the curtain has closed on a particular point in our life. So that part is unavoidable. I think the other point is a little avoidable. We imagine that it's going to be like when we went to college.
Oh, yeah.
We imagine that we're going to talk to our kids once a week, that they're barely going to want to tell us something, and that they're not going to want to be with us.
And it's way different now.
Way different. They are going to communicate with us almost every day. They're going to tell us what they eat because they're going to send us a picture of it. We're going to be electronically connected. And there's a lot of great research. The AARP did some research recently about the difference between the way our generation felt about our kids and the way we felt about our parents. Our kids want to be with us. They listen to us more. They value our opinions more. They want to tell us about their personal lives and their aspirations more. So part of, I think, what happens to us is we bring our own experience into something where our own experience is irrelevant.
Now, kids going away to college, but there are also kids starting high school for the first time. And you mentioned that they want to keep in touch with their families. Another article that's on Grown and Flown is, here's what your high school freshman wants you to know. And one of these things is they want you to know that they still want to hang out with family sometimes, even though they don't act like it. Is that really true?
It really is true. There's, you know, this is based on research. This generation wants to be with their parents more than any generation did in the past. They still act like sullen teenagers, but they are really happy to be with us and they really value the experience. And you just need to find those things. I know in my family was watching a lot of 80s movies. So for us, they were great, you know, retreads. We hadn't seen them in whatever years. And for my kids, they were brand new. And it was just such a fun experience. So finding things like that that can bring everyone together, even if you've got a sulky 14-year-old in your midst.
What's up with teenagers, man? I'm telling you.
Yeah, that I can't explain.
But 80s movies is the key. There's something about the Anthony Michael Hall that just makes everything soothing, isn't it? I don't know why.
You know, they haven't seen The Breakfast Club, and they haven't seen Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Roll those movies out, because it's something we all enjoy together.
Sure.
Another one of these high school freshmen, what they want us to know. I want you to expect more from me and then remind me I can do it. I will say this. I get really frustrated when my kids don't do their homework, and so maybe I start to nag a little bit. And you can say, do your homework till you're blue in the face. They're not going to do their homework until they decide to do their homework, and sometimes you got to let them learn on their own.
That is absolutely true. But in these last weeks of summer, we can prepare for the fact that we know that might happen. So if you knew that your kid had trouble with a particular subject last year, or if their problem was organizational, which is, I think, even more common than actually subject problems, you know, just getting the work done in the amount of time, the way it's supposed to be done, you've got another week or two to sit down and talk with your kid. How are we going to do it differently this year? What tools, maybe online tools, maybe apps, are we going to use to keep you organized? Are you going to use to keep you organized? And try and get them to commit to certain things, to certain milestones, to certain homework will be done by X time. You can make certain plans now while things are cool and calm, because I think what you're describing, Wendy, is where we all get to, where it's red hot.
Yep.
You know, they haven't done it. We're angry. Time is ticking. That is not the moment to discuss plans for organization or plans for doing better in a subject. This is the moment to say, you know what, maybe Khan Academy or some of the free, amazing online material is something you should consult more regularly before tests, because we know you had trouble in X subject last year. So now, while things are still cool and calm and we're in summer, it's time to make some agreements maybe around how those things are going to be handled at a better time than once they flare up, as you're describing.
And I can't believe a kid wouldn't go to Khan Academy, I think, .com. It is any question you have, what is mitochondria? It will be answered.
Wow, really?
Anything. It's like, I wish this was around when we were in high school. I would have gotten straight A's.
Yeah, it's relatively new. It's an amazing tool to study for exams. You know, go watch those lectures on something that you might have learned in class. It just isn't completely clear to you. It's an invaluable tool, and kids are so lucky to have it.
Is it a computer answering these questions, or is it human beings?
No, isn't it a man whose daughter went away to school, or he was on a business trip, and he wanted to help her study, so he put these things together. Am I somewhat right on that?
It was Saul Khan is the organizer, and I don't know if it was a daughter or a niece. Something makes me think, I don't know the whole story. But he started with one or two subjects for a high school student, and then the site has just expanded. So it's not now all him, because there's so much content, but it is for kids at all levels. It's their videos, and they're real human beings.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Impressive.
We should study that when we get off the air,
as
so we sound
we're
smarter.
Done. Yep.
Lisa, it is a pleasure to talk to you.
Lisa, you agreed very quickly on that. Thanks for appreciate it.
Do you have a kid going back to school? I believe it was Mary Vandeveld who does traffic for us, who said this is the first time in 27 years she doesn't have someone going back to school. You still have someone starting school, don't you?
No. You're I'm done? In her exact same position. My youngest graduated in June.
Congratulations.
Yep. So it's my first time in that probably that many years as well. Well,
feels good, huh?
Keep helping us, okay?
I'm here for you. I love being on your show. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
She's amazing. Lisa Heffernan, one of the co-founders of Grown and Flown. She's also a New York Times bestselling author and just pretty cool. So grownandflown.com, a quick break, and we'll come back and see what's coming up on the WinTrust Business Lunch.